And I'm sitting here with Adam Gilmore. Welcome to the Space Show, Adam.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
So where are we and what are you doing here?
Okay, so you're in our brand new factory that we've just moved into 2 days ago, where it's about four times the size of our last factory, and we will be developing an orbital vehicle in this factory, and we have capacity to build two side by side before we need a bigger factory.
Right, so we're up in Queensland, not far from the Gold Coast. That's your headquarters. And you just took me on a quick tour of the facility. I noticed there's a big truck out there with something interesting inside it.
Yep, that's the next rocket that we're launching. So this is a prototype with our main orbital engine inside of it, and we're doing a flight test hopefully in about 4 weeks. It'll go up to about 35, 40 kilometres, and we're very interested in that as flight testing our main engine. We've been doing a whole lot of ground tests last year, and that's great, but until you strap it onto a rocket and launch it up towards space, you don't know if it's going to work properly in the right environment. So this is what we're testing.
And the primary test, I guess, is your propulsion system. Tell us about that. Hybrid engine?
Yeah, so we have a hybrid engine, which is a little bit different than the norm. So we have a liquid oxidizer and a solid fuel. So the oxidizer we use is hydrogen peroxide, and the fuel we use is a proprietary mix that we've tested ourselves. We've probably tested about 12 different types of fuel in our lifetime here in the company. And the one we've got now, we like a lot. It works very well and gives us a lot of very good properties. So we're quite happy with it.
And why hybrid? Is it cheap? Is it something good about hybrid?
Yeah, well, we had a good look at the market and why rockets were expensive. And one of the main reasons why rockets are expensive is rocket engines are expensive. And both liquid and solid rocket engines have very long development times and very high cost cycles in development. And hybrid rockets are a lot easier to initially construct, a lot easier to test, a lot safer to test. So safety is very important for us. We knew a lot of universities were looking at hybrid rockets as well, so we thought we could pull talent out of universities, which we have, and so far so good.
So the rocket configuration, you were telling me there's the propellant, the solid propellant, then there's a liquid, and then there's a pressurization tank. So how does it all fit together, and what happens when you hit go?
Yeah, so you need to have a lot of pressure in a rocket engine to get it to work well. So, the minimum you need is about 35 atmospheres, so 35 times the pressure of a standard atmosphere. And, rocket engines can go up to 200 or even 300 atmospheres. So we're going to run ours at 35 to 40 atmospheres, and that's not bad for a hybrid. And to do that, we have a pressurized system, like a tank, that's made of carbon fiber filament wound that holds helium in it. So when we hit go, the valve opens up into the oxidizer tank, pressurizes that. We open another valve to push that into the solid rocket motor, and then you get combustion, and it performs like a normal rocket engine after that.
So the combustion is spontaneous, or do you have an igniter?
No, we don't, because it's hydrogen peroxide. We put it through a catalyst pack, and it decomposes into water and oxygen at higher temperatures higher than the ignition point of the fuel. So as soon as we turn the valve on, it just bang. We don't need any igniters.
So in flight, if it's going sideways, can that system shut that oxidizer off and stop the engine?
Yes, it can.
Well, that's a big plus over and above a solid rocket engine. The shuttle boosters, for example.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of the reasons why we like hybrids. You can start and stop them when you want. You can throttle them. So we throttled that big engine down to about 30% throttle and back up to 100%. A smaller version of that, we throttle up and down about 5 or 6 times in the same burn. And we can theoretically stop and start the motor, 10, 20, 30 times a flight if it's in space, for example.
Right, so we saw out there on a truck, that rocket in there, is about 9 metres?
Yeah, it's 9 metres long. It's about 52 centimetres in diameter.
And how big is the nozzle, and how big is the propellant component of that?
The propellant's about 700 kilos, and the nozzle diameter, the outer diameter, is around 50 centimetres.
And is that a complex piece of design work, the nozzle shape itself? Is that key to the performance?
It's not easy. It's not super hard either, but it's been a little tricky. We've gone through about three or four different designs, and some of the tricky bit is just having a material that doesn't burn up, after a long engine burn. So we have a newer material on there now that we're pretty confident will work.
So how much of your rocket is proprietary, unique to Gilmour Space Technologies?
All of it. Like, we've designed 100% of the rocket. We've probably manufactured about 80% of the rocket and outsourced 20% to mainly Queensland companies.
Is there any concerns or interest from defence? Are they worried that you're going to be launching weapons or any of that sort of stuff? Or the neighbouring countries, for example?
We talk to defence a lot, and I don't think they're worried about what we're doing. I think they're interested in what we're doing, and we also talk to another group called Defence Export Clearance about what we're up to. And, you know, we have regular meetings. They could probably come and visit our factory twice a year. And, you know, if they ever want to talk to us, or we want to talk to them, same day type of thing. So, I don't think they're too worried.
So I assume the rocket is guided. And what's the guidance system? Does the nozzle pivot, or the fins twist, or any?
Well, no, this one's actually not guided. The next one has to be guided. So this one has avionics in there that will work in a guidance system that we are testing, but we're not actually controlling this rocket. It launches off a rail, and by the time it leaves the rail, it's going fast enough to have good aerodynamic stability, and it just shoots up into the air.
So we were talking before about the wind factors involved. Are there going to be pretty tight criteria on ground level and upper level winds for your launch?
Not really tight, but we've analysed the weather patterns at the launch site, and there are periods of time where we would not be able to launch. So we're probably going to launch in the morning. Generally, the winds are calmer in the morning than in the evening. So I'm pretty sure over, say, a seven-day launch window that we have, one of the mornings should be fine.
That's fantastic. So tell me about the involvement and sort of support you're getting from the space agency. I understand you've had a lot of interest and a lot of support from them.
Well, we talk to the space agency a lot. We haven't had really any support from the space agency yet. I don't blame them. They haven't been able to get a lot of funding that allows them to do anything. But we got a lot of verbal support, and, they're asking us what we think they should be doing. They're asking us for feedback on what they're doing, and they're listening to us when we say, I think you should focus on this more or something like that. So they're definitely a very well engaged space agency. Fantastic. They just don't have any money to get anything done yet.
One of the things that was talked about in the lead up to the establishment of the space agency was the ability or possibility that the government can help with permits, insurance, indemnities, and that sort of thing. Is any of that sort of support coming from the agency?
Well, not the agency, but the government. So the government changed the rules around launch last year. And again, very happy with the government. They went through a process of talking to the industry, getting feedback, clarifying things. You know, we gave them some proposals about what we thought was fair and reasonable, and that came out in the legislation. So the insurance has come down massively from what it was to what it is now, and I think they're going to adopt a philosophy similar to what other big sovereign launch countries do, how they regulate the launch industry. What's interesting is the Parliamentary Act gave the authority for the launch to the space agency, which is different from a lot of our peers. So, for example, in America, the Civil Aviation Authority equivalent governs the launch rules, but in Australia it's given to the space agency. That doesn't bother me, because we want it to be where people know what's going on and what they're doing. Not that CASA doesn't, but their main business so far has been civil aviation, not rockets.
Presumably they'll be making sure there's no civil aviation near your rocket launch on the day, correct?
Very correct, yes. Yeah. So for sure we'll be talking to CASA, or the space agents will be talking to CASA, where our launch site will be.
Right. We talked also before about the site of the launch and where that might be for this upcoming one and what the future hopes and plans might be. Talk about that for me.
Yeah, sure. So this rocket's getting launched on a private property in northwest Queensland that's out of range of all infrastructure. So there's no oil pipelines or electricity lines or, you know, communities nearby. One plane flies over it a day in the late afternoon, so we're going to launch in the morning. And that will be the only time we launch from that place, because the next rockets we launch will be orbital vehicles, and you have to launch them over water. So we'll be launching off the coast. It looks like the first launch site in Australia will be in South Australia, and we will launch there if it comes online in time for us to do our first launch. It can do polar orbits, but it can't do equatorial orbits. So we would like to see the Queensland government set up a launch site in Queensland to be able to do all the equatorial orbits. We think about 80% of our business will be equatorial-type orbits.
Do you have any candidate sites? I know like Cape York years ago on the Bjelke-Petersen period was talked about. Is there some location that is sort of earmarked?
Well, we like the area up near Mackay. We like that because it has a lot of space around it from north to south almost, where there's a lot of sea and no neighbouring countries for 1,200 kilometres. And that's enough room for the first and second stage to drop in the middle of the ocean and not harm anyone. So somewhere around there is good.
How close to the Barrier Reef is it? That's obviously a concern of some, well, many people.
Well, it's about 50 kilometres from the Barrier Reef, and I'm sure that there'll be people concerned, but I don't think people realise that probably 30 to 50 jet planes fly over the Great Barrier Reef every day with a heck of a lot more dangerous fuel on them than our rocket will, with a lot more toxic fuel on them than our rocket has. Our rocket has very green propellant. And really what you're talking about is the very, very, very small statistical chance that the rocket malfunctions and somehow falls into the reef 50 kilometres away. But the first stage of our rocket will fall about 300 kilometres away, so that's out of Australian waters, way, way, way past the reef. And the second stage will fall about 800 kilometres away, which is in deep international water. So there's not any plans to have rocket engines or bits of rockets fall onto the reef. And, you know, we can work out a disaster scenario where that would happen, and it's probably very, very similar to the statistics of an aircraft breaking up over the Great Barrier Reef.
Fantastic. So, theoretically, in a couple of years when you're able to do this orbital launch, maybe out of South Australia, you'll have a launch control centre. Will that be here? Will that be mobile? Will that be at the launch site?
It's a good question. We'll probably have a mobile launch control site as well as one here. We have a mobile launch site for this rocket we're about to launch. It's only got four places on it. That's a good question. We've got to figure that one out.
Sure. I know Rocket Labs have just had a recent launch. Could you compare and contrast what they're doing with what you've got in mind and what you plan to do?
Yeah, I mean, some of the market we're going after is a similar market to them, but we're developing a vehicle that has about double the payload of what they can do, and we've established that there's a market for larger satellites of around 300 to 400 kilograms that Rocket Lab can't do. Rocket Lab are about 3 or 4 years ahead of us in development. They're the market leaders and pioneers, I would say, for small launch. And, we're very happy to see them succeed because it's proving the model. There's some skepticism in the past about whether small rockets will, you know, be successful. And I think Rocket Lab's done a fantastic job of proving the naysayers wrong.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's right. Well, a rising tide raises all boats, as they say. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Adam. It's been fantastic to visit you. And thanks for taking time to speak on the Space Show.
My pleasure. All the best.